Hey everyone, and welcome to minute 39 of season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely Thursday is my good friend Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back to the show, Heather.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing great, doing great. All right. So minute 39 begins with a massive explosion. You know, what a way to start. And ends,
very exciting.
And ends with Zeus moving forward to try and check out the damage.
Yeah, so, the whole sequence is an explosion, pretty much.
It's yeah, pretty much. Almost this entire minute is just the various repercussions of the explosions here. I mean, again, we have very little dialogue. We have two lines of dialogue in this entire minute. Most of it is nonverbal explosions.
Yes, but the explosions are saying a lot.
Yes. They do, especially when you look at the geography, which we'll get to. I actually printed out a map of the area, and it's really, really freaky.
Really cool.
It's really freaky where all these shots are. You know, so we'll talk about that. We'll get there. You know, just a little bit of a preview for people. So we ended yesterday with John throwing the bomb outside of the back of the subway train, and we saw Flash. And this minute begins with the explosion after the flash. And it's a great pyrotechnic feat, the way that they did this. I say this a lot, but I'm a big fan of practical effects, you know, in yep. movies. I love CGI also, because CGI lets you do things, especially in science fiction and things like that, making things look more believable. But if you can do something in practical effects, I always like watching it in practical effects. And that's what they do here with this.
I largely prefer it. There are a few things that annoy me more than lazy CGI. When it's just there and could have used some practical effects, but you can see that they were like, nah, we're just going to draw that there anyway. And you can see that no care and love is put into it. One of the things that I've heard from enough actors, writers, and directors and producers over the years is the same connectivity that they all seem to have is telling the truth of the story. So telling the truth can look different from if you're the actor or the director or the screenwriter. In this instance, we're telling the truth through action sequences. We are telling our story and trying to make it truthful and realistic in this fantasy as possible. If that train, which I mean, at this point, we have already a ton of tension built up. This is the explosion. This is where everything goes to crap. If I look at that train and I can tell that it's a CGI computer train coming across the subway at the bottom there, it's going to take me out of the moment.
Okay,
I know that's
fair.
It's not, it looks not, if it lo- it doesn't look real to me, then I'm not believing what you're selling me.
Right.
Now, if this is a cheap 80s, 90s fantasy show like Camelot or something, I am not expecting that level of dedication and money and time with the practical effects. You're going to give me a silly CGI dragon. I'm going to buy your silly CGI dragon. That's fine. That's the world that you're selling me, and that's what I'm buying into. This is another story entirely. This is a film that is solely built around the idea of action sequences. The story is being told through the action sequences. So you damn well better make them good.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to lose me. And this one is spectacular. And it is, if there's CGI involved, which I'm sure there is, it's not noticeable at all. I've watched this entire sequence on repeat multiple times because it's so fantastic, and it just looks like it's all practical effects, which again probably isn't, but that's an testament to how well it was done.
Right. I mean, the question is how much CGI were they using in 1995? You know, in action
exactly.
movies.
I mean, this is coming off of Terminator 2 and Jurassic Park, where it was just new technology.
Correct.
So some filmmakers were being more aggressive with it, and some were using it with more caution and restraint, which mm-hmm. I think is the way to go.
Yeah.
But I don't see anything excessive used here. And again, there's just a level of realism that makes you actually care, and you're in the moment, you're present, you're experiencing what the characters are experiencing. Even the lady that's just watching the thing coming, or the jerky guy on the phone, or the cop that we were just mad at a minute ago because he's acting the fool. But now they're all together and they're fighting to stay alive together against a common enemy that they don't even know exists. It's all sorts of interesting character overlap. I like it.
Yeah, it really is. I like the way that they did it also. And you know, even just in the first 5 seconds of this minute, they show us various locations where the explosion is going off and stuff like that. You see, you know, you see underground, you see people walking close by, you know, on street level, you see people a little further away and stuff like that. Like, and they're all completely affected by this explosion. I mean, this is a huge explosion that's going on. And, you know, it
lives up to the prediction of the little paperclip. So yes. there was no letdown here. This was what we expected to happen. It was pretty
right.
good.
Right. And I love that there are a few shots where you can see that they're basically just shaking the camera, you know, to make things look even.
Or the angle of the camera is like slightly off.
Yes.
Like it's sideways. Make the people look sideways.
That's yeah, right.
You don't think about that when you're watching it the first That's time. Right.
Mm-hmm. I love there's a guy in the train station who's like reading a newspaper, and as soon as the explosion goes off, he takes the newspaper to like shield himself. You know, and then it looks like he's getting ready to start to run.
There's the flight, fright, the flight or fight and freeze factor. And I totally buy into the, I'm going to protect myself with this, because instinctually that's what you're going to do to stop something from flying at you. And when you don't have enough time to actually process that information or the danger, especially because you're not anticipating that kind of thing to happen, it's totally plausible. It also makes a little bit funny for the moment.
Yeah.
And that's where dark humor comes in. Just like the people observing from across the street, like a bunch of creepy voyeurs.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get to those voyeurs.
We
see them in this minute, but they're only going to talk tomorrow.
Yep. But that's what we get here. We get a bunch of just real people reacting like normal people would in this situation. And it's a very human moment. Everybody running from the train is fantastic. And then when they pull the close up on the cop and he's frozen. So, and this shouldn't surprise anyone, because this is the guy that has the shaky hand who's pulled his gun when he shouldn't have and is almost prepared to use excessive force over a very, very silly crime. And now, not only is the guy that he was holding his gun up against is trying to save the people around him, he's standing there, a fool, just staring at this madness ensue.
Right.
Despite all of his training.
Exactly. And basically they show us some of the geographical locations of where, you know, where these shots are taking place. So you see that you know, within the first few seconds, that one of the shots is the corner of William Street and Liberty. Okay. And then, you know, that's actually one of the shots where they're making the camera go up and down. You know, and then we're back in the subway station, you know, itself, where we have the bored woman from yesterday that we talked about. She starts running, and then they showed the train basically come off the track and start moving, I guess, across the area where people are waiting. And that reminds me, have you ever been to Universal Studios?
Nope.
Okay, so Universal Studios on the tour, they have, you know, you're on a train and all these things are happening and stuff like that. And one of the things they have there is a subway train that, like, comes towards you like this, you know.
Oh, that's intense.
I mean, this movie is not a Universal movie, so that threw me off a little bit. But it's just really cool that that's what it reminded me of, the Universal Studios tour, with the way that the train comes at you and comes at the passenger, the people waiting online and stuff like that. You know,
you want to run.
Oh yeah, definitely makes you want to run. No question about that. And
successful.
And they even give us a shot that looks like it's the POV from inside of the train, which is like moving in a strange circular way, which is very cool. You know, we see like sparks flying, we see people running. It's just great. I mean, this is a minute of total chaos and pandemonium and mayhem and all that stuff. It's just great.
It absolutely is. And after the train does its business and the people have run away, which at this point, I mean, I don't know how many people it's actually taken out or injured or hurt, or how many they were able to save, because all we see is the smoke clouds coming out from, and I love that too, that effect of the smoke and the dirt coming out from the stairs and from underground, and the people running out with it. And there's still more debris exploding up too.
Yeah.
It's really, really,
I actually love that from,
which the, again,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, no, for me, it was just very interesting looking at it, because I wonder, when I saw this in 1995, you know, what I thought about it then. But since we've all seen pictures of 9/11, about the way that you know, dust and debris just creates these billows of smoke and dust and stuff like that. Looking at it now, it makes sense that this would happen. But I wonder if in 1995, you know, when we were all watching this movie, we looked at it and we might have said, that's really strange that there's so much dust coming out of there. You know, I guess they forgot to send the cleaning lady down to, you know, down to the subway station to dust up and stuff like that.
Or did they exaggerate this for cinematic, you know, whatever, as does happen often in movies like this,
what?
Which is absolutely fine.
What? Are you saying that in movies they exaggerate the effects? Come on.
You know, sometimes, not often, but sometimes they don't tell the truth in movies.
You mean every single car that gets into an accident doesn't automatically explode?
Almost all of them. Almost all of them. I'll lie here all day, okay? But yeah, though, I mean, the realism effect of it, and because they're using practical effects, and because we have the human effect on top of it, and we're not looking at John right now, too. We have no idea what's going on with John.
No clue.
We see these normal people, and even Zeus. Zeus is still just a normal guy.
That's right.
What we were just talking about on the last episode, too. He's your everyman. He's a normal guy, and his initial reactions are the same as everyone else, but then he acts.
Unlike
everyone else who just runs or freezes, he acts.
That's right.
To save somebody.
But isn't he
the hero factor?
Isn't Zeus lying on the ground? He gets up really quick then, because we don't get to see him get up. He's already standing.
Yeah. He's on the ground. He helps and saves the suit man, the jerky guy.
That's right.
He ironically.
He runs over to the two of them and he goes, "Hey, get out of here. Get out of there. Go." And like he grabs the transit cop and pulls him back and stuff like that. Now, did you notice that in the background there's this huge ad behind?
I didn't,
behind
but
Zeus?
Now I'm gonna look.
You can see it at second 15, or actually second 19 is the best place to see it.
Oh, there it is. Fortune, end of the job. End of the job. The end of the job. So that looks like. I can't really tell what this fella here is doing. So you've researched this. So please tell me, what is this ad for?
Okay, well, it's an ad for a magazine, the Fortune magazine, which we've talked about in the past. So I'm not going to go into in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. We talked about the Fortune magazine, but we didn't talk about this specific one that came out. So this the article that it's advertising. the magazine that came out on September 19th, 1994. Okay. So I've been teasing for, I teased yesterday that today we're going to get more of an idea of when this is actually taking place. So my
So we
thoughts are
have
now changing.
advertisements. Yeah, because they had just, you just told me that advertisements for the Goodwill Games were like the end of July through the beginning of August in
That's right.
94.
That's right. So it's making me start to think that maybe this heat wave is in September. Again,
It would make more sense, particularly with the kids in school.
correct. Correct. And if
It would make way more sense.
this magazine came out on September 19th, 1994. So it's not as if they would have had that ad up there for 2 months beforehand. The Goodwill Games, okay, they didn't take it down yet. That's sort of
Yeah, that's what I
plausible.
would guess.
But this
That's
is
what I guess. I'm
making.
sure that happens to you on the subway, right? I mean,
So this is
yeah, why
making
not?
me start to believe that this movie is actually taking place in September.
I'd have to agree with you based on the facts that we have before us right now,
But I mean, again,
based on
I can
that
blow up
information.
that entire theory from the fact that they were probably just filming in September. So, they didn't go
It's
and change.
probably the case. I mean, and that's the thing too. It really does depend on the filmmaker because sometimes all those little things in the background and nuances are on purpose, and
That's right.
sometimes they aren't. They're just there. So it's hard. It's hard to know. It's fun to speculate, though. I would still say based on all the information in general that you have so far that this would probably be September. It's either the beginning of summer or end of summer. It's one or the other. And if I was going to guess which one, it makes more sense, I think, for it to be summer, especially because of the whole heat wave thing. And yeah, it just makes sense for it to be September.
Again, I've always assumed that it was Memorial Day, June, something like that. Maybe because that's when the movie came out, and that was the impression that I got.
Oh.
You know,
And you
that
saw
could
this
be.
in the theater, right?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Awesome.
But I saw it in July
Well,
because
let me see.
it only came out in Israel in July that year. And I've told the story of what happened. I was supposed to go to I was in it's a very strange thing. I was in a class, just me and the teacher. Okay, this was a college course where I was the only student in the class, and we would have our classes in the teacher's office. He had like another job, and we would go and we'd meet there and have the classes there. And when my friends told me that this movie, was when that we wanted to go see it on opening night, so I called up my teacher and I said, "Look, I'm not gonna be able to make it. I'm not feeling well." And I pushed off the class. No problem. This was also the night that I believe in Israel they debuted the first episode of Friends, because I remember I taped it
Oh,
in
wow.
order to watch it when I came back from the movie. Now, what happened? I went with the friends to the movie, and when we came out of the movie, I bumped into my teacher who was on his way to see the next showing.
That's really cool.
Yes,
It's always fun when you're a kid to see a teacher out in the wild.
he was not happy. No, but this is a college course, but whatever. It was crazy.
Why wasn't he happy?
Because I lied to him and he caught me in that lie.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah,
Whatever.
that slight problem, slight problem. Oh well. What can you do?
On about your day.
That's right.
Die
So
hard. What are you gonna do?
that's right. So Zeus basically saves the cop, and then once again we see more people running and a lot of crazy things going on with this runaway subway train, which is just smashing everything to bits. And then the train itself somehow has an explosion underneath it, and it turns on its side again. A lot of this just doesn't make any sense, but it's just fun to watch.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have no idea how any of that explosion business works.
That's right.
That part I don't need to know. It's fine. Yep, that part I have. I mean, if you want to tell me and there's it actually does and it does for a reason and that's been thought about and put together, I'm all for the information, but it doesn't have to work for me. That's one of those, okay. That's fine. It's like magic in movies. If you want to tell me that magic does this certain thing, just tell me the basic rules I don't have to know anymore.
Right.
It's fine. It's entertaining on its own. I don't need all of the details.
Right. Okay. That's fair. And then we get the shot of the billowing smoke coming out of the, or the billowing dust coming out of the subway exit, you know, just flowing all over the place. We see a whole bunch of businessmen looking around. We see you know, women running across the street. One of the businessmen looks, to me, it just looks really funny, his little ponytail that he has there.
Yeah.
You know,
stands out for sure.
Yes, he stands out. But what's even funnier is we see him a few seconds earlier in a completely different place. You know, at like second 30, he's standing there with someone else by like a fire hydrant, and the two of them are sort of embracing. And then we see like these two women run across the street, and then we see him running across the street. So I think this is a continuity error, because I don't think he would have been able to within 3 seconds to get there. You know, they were just using the same actor over and over, I guess.
Which fair.
Okay. Now, the problem that I have here, and again, I've never been, I don't recall if I've ever been in this area here, but geographically, something doesn't make any sense here. Okay, because then they show us a shot of, we see the cab that Zeus apparently had stolen. Okay, with the door still swung open, and we're able to see that we're on the corner of Liberty Street, and then you see like another street sign that seems to have been blown away a little bit, and it says the Louise Nivelson Plaza. Now, when I looked on the map, that's like 2.5 blocks away from the subway entrance. So I'm like really confused how that's possible. You know, how is it possible that the smoke is billowing? You know, maybe it's not coming out of the subway station itself. Maybe it's coming out of something else there. I don't know.
I was going to say the one building there, a lot of those buildings go underground. It could have been from their basement and come up.
Right. It could be from another building, but it looked as if it's coming from, and again, if that's the cab that Zeus had, so he parked or illegally parked right by the entrance.
Yeah.
So again, it doesn't make sense geographically, because it's a block and a half away. Or it's like 2.5 blocks away, where you have this plaza.
That's really far.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty far, particularly in a big city like that.
Right. I mean, throughout this minute, we see a lot of different street signs. We see street signs for Liberty Street, for William Street, for Cedar Street. Like I said, we have the Louise Nevelson Plaza. I mean, there's a lot of different signs here. And, you know, I have a map, and I circled where all of these different streets are. And again, they're not far, but they're also not close. You know, that's what it comes down to. It's a little strange to me. The coolest thing that I found is that on the corner of Liberty and William Streets is where the Alamo Drafthouse cinema of Lower Manhattan is situated. So here you got a movie theater right nearby.
Oh,
here.
Cool.
I don't know if in 1994, 1995, it was there. That I couldn't tell you.
Well, if it was, I'm glad they didn't explode it.
Yeah. So let's go to some of these streets, and I'll give a little bit of the history on them. So first of all, you have Liberty Street, which up until the American Revolution was known as Crown Street. And
that makes sense.
And Crown Street was both Liberty Street and Maiden Lane between. Then they changed the name to Liberty Street in 1793. And what they did was that there's like a junction that's connected to it that is now considered, it's called Maiden Lane. And then the Central Railroad of New Jersey's main ferry would run from the foot of Liberty Street on the Hudson River and go all the way to Jersey City, you know, from there. We're also not far from. I mean, we talked about this. I think during the first week, also the Staten Island Ferry docks not very far from here, also.
You know, which so, you can ride for free.
Hey, you remember? That's great.
They remember.
That's right. The street was also extensively damaged during the attacks on 9/11. Because part of it is adjacent to the South Tower, because we did see that also last week when Zeus showed up, he looked up, or two, it was even 2 weeks ago, where he looked up and saw the World Trade Center, you know, right above it. Oh,
it's so rough seeing those, and it happens in movies all the time because there are so many movies that are set in New York and with the New York skyline. Yeah. It's always gut wrenching to see.
That's right, and there was a Burger King on the corner of Liberty Street, which was used as the NYPD headquarters after the attacks. So, yeah. So then we have the Louise Nevelson Plaza, which was known beforehand as the Legion Memorial Square. It's a public art installation and park in Lower Manhattan, and it includes an arrangement of large abstract sculptures designed by the artist Louise Nevelson. So some of the stuff we see here is probably, you know, what she did. You know, you have all these murals and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's called an outdoor environment. So, and it's adjacent to the building of the Federal Reserve, surprisingly. Hint, hint, wink, oh, wink. right. So they actually opened the site in 1977. And it was then known as Legion Memorial Square. And in 1978, a year later, they changed the name to the Louise Nevelson Plaza. And it was the city's first public space named after and designed by a living artist.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
After 9/11, they actually made some changes for security reasons around there. And they say that was the first time that they made changes that were not connected to what she herself did. You know, the original stuff of what she did there. So, yeah, it's very cool that they have this. So then, besides that, we have William Street. Who do you think William Street is named after? What would be your guess?
Tennessee Williams. Because that's the first thing that popped in my head.
Okay, and that would be wrong.
It's not. I'm definitely wrong. I knew it was wrong, but I went with the first thing that popped in my head, Tennessee Williams. Yeah, I have no idea. Montel Williams. It's not. I know. I'm going to keep giving you wrong answers.
That's okay. You can do so. It's a street that's been, or it's one of the oldest streets in Manhattan. And even in 1660, it was there. It was originally called King Street. And then they in 1647, they renamed it William Beckman. He was the mayor of New Amsterdam. So they ended up renaming it. See, I would have guessed that it was probably something British, but now that I read this, it makes sense that it would be something Dutch, because New York was a Dutch city for a very long time.
Yes. And I'm not upset with them replacing all of those terrible names like Crown and King from monarchy. It's so bad.
Well, that sort of makes sense also, doesn't it?
So we've got those around here too. Yeah, we've got some of those around here too, though. Yeah. So not many left.
Correct. And so, you know, we're continuing with all of the debris and destruction here and stuff like that. We see more people just running across the street. Some of them, we see one guy who looks like he's holding his chest a little bit. You know, maybe having a little bit of a heart attack. We see another guy who looks like a Secret Service agent because he's got like these really dark sunglasses helping this crying woman across the street. And then we get the shot of the voyeurs that you were talking about. You know, we see a businessman just looking out the window. And I love that they give us a reflection in his glasses.
Yeah.
You know, of what he's actually looking at. Yeah. And then two other people in his office like quickly come behind him to look at what's going on. And now they see an even larger billow of smoke and debris coming out from wherever they are. You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, could it be that this explosion is, that it was just created by the fact that there was this the bomb went off. So that this isn't necessarily, the entrance to the subway. They've created a new entrance to the subway. Could that be what's going on here?
Hey. That would make sense.
Yeah.
It's
Okay.
plausible.
And if you look at second 44, we can see where these voyeurs are looking from, because you see Zeus's taxi cab with the door still
Yep.
open in the far left-hand corner of the screen. So it's like, if you're looking at a clock face, it's like now at 10 or 11 o'clock, from their perspective. So again, it's great that they're giving us a panoramic view of the things that are going on here. So I like that.
Great. That shot too in particular is just a great shot. That plume of debris and dust. And but you can still see the cab. I'll admit though, until you pointed it out, I recognized that there was a cab there because of the patch of yellow standing out, but I didn't connect that it was Zeus's cab until you pointed that out.
You're welcome,
Which again, those details are really, I was gonna say, yes, thank you. Because those details, like I said, sometimes these things are intentional and sometimes they're not. But when they are, they're really cool. It's neat to see all the extra effort that was put into to tell the story.
And as we're like panning across and seeing all these different things, we hear a woman scream, "Oh my God."
Yep. That's fair.
Yeah, that definitely is fair. And at this point, it brings us back into the subway station itself, and we see flickering lights. The lights have been affected a little bit. We see people hugging, that they're still alive and that they're very happy. And then we see then the we get like a shot that gives us Zeus's face, and it's just really cool watching him, because it then follows his gaze, as he's like looking around. And then we it shows us like beyond a train, where we see like some lights behind the train, but we don't really know what's going on. And that's pretty much how this minute ends. Once again, leaving us on a cliffhanger to find out what's going on tomorrow.
It's really exciting. You should come back tomorrow and listen and talk about it.
You've
More crazy stuff goes on because that's
been
this
acting
movie.
very nice over the last few days, so I will let you come back tomorrow. Yeah.
That's so funny. I was just going on about how I'm being very staunch.
That's all right. Not a problem. So,
I'll take
did you have
it.
anything else you wanted to talk about in this minute?
No, I don't think I have anything to add to this one.
Okay.
That was pretty solid. I
Okay.
think we covered
So
it.
the script, we only have about half a page for this minute, and it's all descriptive
Yeah.
information. Subway tunnel down the track, the bundle of plastic explosives which McLean flung from the train, the plastique detonates. A holocaustic explosion erupts in the tunnel, knocking the train's back car off the tracks and tipping it over. The explosion blasts a hole in the ceiling of the subway tunnel, creating a crater in the middle of Wall Street. On the subway station platform, the fireball erupts from the tunnel, opening with fury and impact, knocking Zeus, the businessman, the transit cop, and other commuters to the platform floor. Then it's all over. Commuters are running from the exit, screaming. The ceiling sprinklers have come on. The transit cop is on his knees, searching for his gun. Zeus, groggy, gets to his feet. The sprinklers showering him. He peers through heavy smoke at, and then we cut it off. So I like it. It's nice and descriptive,
Yeah,
but
it's pretty.
yeah. But they are basically alluding to the fact that there now is a hole in the ground. So it is possible that this hole is, by the square that we were talking about before, the Louise Nevison
That
Square. But that still doesn't
place.
explain then why Zeus's cab would be there. So maybe it's someone else's cab who ran out of his cab. I don't know.
Possible too. We may have just jumped to that conclusion. I like the idea of it though. I like that it's potentially there, but that would make more sense that it's just another cab as opposed to his, especially because of where it's located. But at the same time,
Exactly.
I also like that in the script too. I think the only thing that felt a little different too was it said the explosion knocked Zeus and the transit cop and the guy down, but he actually is the one that rescued them. So once again, we're making him more likable. We're showing more hero action than him being Which again, too, it makes sense for his character, but I think it's a much better contrast for McClane.
Yeah.
Because that's more McClane. It's more McClane behavior there. He's more rough around the edges and less not about saving the people, but he's not as actively caring about that, where we get to see it from the perspective of Zeus, which is much more humane.
Yeah.
And I like them both. That's true. Good. That's true. They work well together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true. Okay, so every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Revenge Edition, or Sibling Rivalry. So, Heather, I've been looking forward for weeks to hear what your story will be for this.
Because I always have really weird stories.
That you do, especially knowing that your father lives in a golf community where they play through they play through his house.
I know. Well, I'm going to go with the theme of bro here. And I am going to tell a bro story, and it's going to be an older bro story too, of us as adults behaving like children. So my brother is 2.5 years younger than me. We are best friends. We've always been best friends, but that also means growing up, we've been enemies because we're bros.
Makes sense.
And you can take whichever meaning of that you feel, because it has multiple layers.
Yeah. Anyone interested in understanding what Heather's talks about, you can go back to Tuesday's episode and listen to all the various definitions of bro that we talked about.
Yes. Get educated from the Urban Dictionary with Rob and Heather. Right. So my brother and I, growing up, I was the older sibling. So I was the one who kind of, I did most of the crappy stuff to him, and he would get frustrated. And I kept getting told, one day he's going to be much bigger than you. Well, that did happen. I'm 5'5". I'm an athletic, strong woman, but he's 6'3", Marine. So at some point, he did surpass me physically. But I held on to that mental superiority for a long time and had him convinced that I was stronger and better. But that stopped. So when he came back from the Marines, we still would scuff it up and wrestle. We've always wrestled. We've always fought. We've always done those things. Sometimes it's playful. Sometimes it gets out of hand. Sometimes it's vengeful. But even as adults, we did. So we were at my now husband's house, and he was having a New Year's Eve party. And this was back when I still drank. And he and I both had a bit of the spirits in us. And we started wrestling in his house in the middle of the party. We broke a lamp.
Oh, wow.
And people were asking, they thought it was very serious. And then all we heard was, it's just Baxendale and Baxendale. That's fine. Just let them do it. Just get all the stuff out of the way so they don't break anything. And that was probably about 11 or 12 years ago. And I think that's the last time that he and I scuffed it up like that. Now neither of us were old enough. We're like, no, we'll get hurt. Stop it. Just punch each other on occasion. That's about it. So now we do the bro punches, which sometimes do leave some bruises. But yeah, so we never really fully grew up or grew out of the sibling rivalry
thing. Okay, I mean, that makes sense. You and I are from the day and age of, wanting to be a Toys R Us kid where you don't have to grow up, so.
Exactly, why would you want to do that? It's not any fun at all. There's too much responsibility.
Yeah, true.
We also grew up in a timeline where we had to be adults when we were little kids.
Yes.
So there's gotta be balance.
Latchkey kids.
That's right.
Exactly. All right, great. That was a great story. Thank you very much, Heather. So, Heather, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Heather Baxendale?
You can find me on heatherbaxendale.com. All of my goodies are there. You can find all the podcasts that I'm on. And you can, you can sign up for my newsletter, too. Sign up for my newsletter. Every 2 weeks, I send it out, and I advertise all of the podcasts I'm on and all the things that I'm doing. My books are also there. So my trilogy was just finished, the Prophecy Trilogy. So go check it out, please. And thank you.
All right. Very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Or if you feel like sending me an email, you can send me one to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Heather, you want to come back tomorrow to finish off the week?
I do.
All right.
Like, literally.
All right. Good. All right. So I will see you.
Yeah. I don't think we have.
I will see you then tomorrow. And and everyone else will have to come back and listen to us again tomorrow. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay. Yay!
Tony comes marching home again. Hoorah! Hoorah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah! Hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.